The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions nights and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I am a little sore.
From what?
Today is a monumentous day because I started training for a half marathon.
That's true. I did not.
Will I quit? Probably.
Yeah. Well, you have already gotten farther than I would have gotten because the idea of running a half marathon to me sounds like death. So
yes, because it would. Have exercise asthma.
I do. I do have asthma, but also just hate running.
I know. You could technically walk it.
Can I? Yeah, I'll do a hot girl half marathon and just walk it.
How long would it take you to do that? I mean,
who knows? I'm not going to do that.
It would take forever. It would take like 5 hours.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, straight up good.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm just going to go with the training program until I get injured. And if I don't, then I'll do the marathon.
Okay. Sure. Our decrepit bodies.
I know. I'm just trying to keep it.
27 years old in the body of an 89-year-old.
I know.
Tough.
But here we are. It's tough. But yeah, tell us about what do we got. Enough about me. What do we got going on today?
Today, I'm going to be telling you about a family who got lost at sea. We haven't had one of these in a while.
Okay. Is this another sailing family? Like, yeah. Oh, we just sail around the world together.
It sure is.
With our 8-year-old.
Yep. It really is that.
Tyler.
Yeah.
Tyler does the sails.
There's no Tyler, but there's Neil and Sandy and Douglas and Anne. Those are the kids.
Sounds fun. Okay. Well, tell me how this family came to be.
Sure. Well, when a mommy and a daddy love each other very much. No. It's a crazy story. So let's get into it.
It's a trademark from you.
Yeah. So our main character today, kind of, is Douglas Robertson. And I say that because he's the one that, you know, told the story, and all of my research is based off of his account of the events. Douglas Robertson was born in Stratfordshire, England. The Robertson family was made up of Lynn and Dougal, and 16-year-old Douglas, 18-year-old Anne, and their twin sons, Neil and Sandy, who were aged 9. And they were hill farmers from Stratfordshire, England, which is a very hard way to make a living. For the first 16 years of Douglas's life, that's what his family did. However, the farm wasn't very lucrative for the family. Douglas, like I said, was the eldest son, and he knew that his father was at the end of his rope financially. Dougal was a former sea captain, and his mother, Lynn, was a practicing midwife and state-registered nurse, and the two met in Hong Kong when they were working. But when they came back to England, they decided to take up farming, despite having no prior qualifications with it.
So, on a whim, we decided to become farmers.
Correct.
That don't make a lot of money.
Well, they didn't know it at the time, but...
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, maybe they did, but I'm sure they went into it thinking, this will be enough for us to live on, but it was a lot harder than I think they bargained for. Douglas remembered as a child, he and his siblings would sit around and listen to his father talk about his times at sea. And sailors can tell a good story, so they loved his stories. In 1968, there was an around-the-world yacht race. Sailing around the world in those days was a big adventure because there was no electronic navigation, no electronic safety aids. You were basically on your own if you went out into the middle of the ocean. And one day, Douglas's brother Neil said, "Daddy's a sailor. Why don't we sail around the world?" And that was really all it took. It was a throwaway comment, but from that moment on, the idea was stuck in Dougal's head. He was struggling on the farm, and his children had never seen anything but Stratfordshire, so he wanted them to be more worldly. And somehow, from that little seed that had been planted in his head, a big plan started to grow that he and his family would sail around the world. It seemed like a huge thing to do, but at the time, it seemed very normal to the family because they had planned for so long. Their first course of action was to sell their farm and find a boat.
Okay, step one.
But that didn't happen overnight. It took them about 2 years to find the right boat. But finally, Douglas's mother came across the boat that had been advertised as a world gurgler.
What? But why is a gurgle?
It just takes the world and it gurgles it up.
Okay.
I have no idea.
That is a strange marketing ploy for a boat.
I am making that up. I mean, I didn't make up the world gurgler. I just, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
That's what I assume. So in July or August of 1970, the family traveled to Malta and saw the boat for the first time, and they named it the Lucette. Dougal and his daughter Anne sailed her from Malta to Falmouth in October of 1970, and that boat would be their home for the next portion of their lives. On the boat was Lynn and Dougal, Douglas and his sister, and then the twins, who were the youngest. It was a 50-year-old, 19-ton, 43-foot schooner, which is a yacht, and it had 6 bunks, a saloon, a galley, and a forecastle. So they each got their own bed, which I think would be very important if you're planning on living on a yacht full-time with your entire family. And although the family first saw the Lucette in July, they wouldn't begin their journey until January, because that was when the wind had shifted to the right quarter that enabled them to set sail around the world. So the family finally left Falmouth on January 27th, 1971, on their adventure of a lifetime. The family was stoked, but looking back on it, Douglas has said that they were also extremely naive. They had no idea where they were going. It was a poorly planned voyage.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Although Dougal was a master mariner and an experienced sailor, and Anne had learned the basics on the voyage back from Malta, the children did not have any sailing experience. Nor did Lynn. They knew that their first stop would be Lisbon, which wasn't too far from Falmouth where they would begin their journey, but other than that, they weren't entirely sure where they were going. Douglas also said that although yachts look really luxurious and beautiful at port, sailing on a yacht at sea is not very easy. There are things to bang your head on, things to fall over, there were lots of stubbed toes, and they had to learn a whole new vocabulary to know what to do on the boat.
Also, the only thing I could think about this entire time is that once you do get pissed off with your family, because you will, there's nowhere to go.
Oh yeah, 16-year-old Douglas, 18-year-old Anne, and 9-year-old twins. There's going to be some fights.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like any age.
Yeah.
Even if it was just two people.
Yes, know? At some point there will be conflict.
Right.
Especially for a big family like that.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, where do you go? Just jump off?
You can't. No, you're stuck. Go to your bunk.
Yeah, I guess.
Which is directly above or below the person you're fighting with.
Yeah.
Like... Thankfully, they were learning very quickly, so they figured out how to sail very early on, and like I said, Dougal had done this for a long time, so he was very experienced.
So you could say the whole family suffered from the how hard is it gene?
Pretty much. They're like, how hard can it be?
Yeah, which is I relate to.
Yeah, we're going to sail across the world, and they were like, bet. Yes, we are. So from Lisbon, they sailed across the Atlantic for 33 days before they made it to the Bahamas, which was the same amount of time it took Christopher Columbus almost 300 years before them.
Wow. But, so they're like doing it as fast as Columbus.
Yeah, it was, I mean, a sailboat. Like, I mean, it was a yacht, but like they took the exact same amount of time as Christopher Columbus, which is kind of funny to me.
That's wild.
Yeah. But so far, their trip was great. They had calm seas, tropical weather. It was the adventure they were looking for. And they did have an adventure. They spent the first 18 months sailing across the Atlantic and stopping at various Caribbean ports. One of their most notable moments was saving a fisherman who was stranded adrift in his fishing boat. So they towed his fishing boat under sail to Nassau in the Bahamas, which is apparently a big deal because it's not easy to tow anything with a sailboat, but they saved this fisherman. So that was a good deed on their part. And as a reward, a shop owner who was a member of a worldwide charitable society offered the family anything they wanted from his shop, which is nice.
Wait, what was the shop of?
I think it was like for boating and stuff. Cool.
Well, I think this is cashing in the good karma.
Yeah.
For whatever is coming up.
Yeah. Well, before we get into what's coming up, here's a bit of tea for you. So it was there that Anne, the oldest daughter, fell in love with this shop owner's son, Jeff. And they announced that she would no longer be coming with the family on their trip because she'd be staying with her new man. And that was a shock to the whole family. And neither her family nor Jeff's family were very happy about this arrangement since they had only known each other for like a week at most. But they were serious. Serious as a heart attack.
Okay.
I'll tell you what.
This is, she's 18?
Yes.
Damn. Well, you can't really tell her no.
Right. But at that point, like, it was 1971 or 72. Like, they couldn't get in contact with her other than, could they even send letters off of a yacht? Like, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. And I was thinking, oh, we'll call her.
They can.
But you're on a boat. That's wild.
Yeah.
So you're just going to leave? You show up this port, and a week later, you're leaving without your daughter.
Yes. And she's staying with this person that you don't know.
That is terrifying.
But they were like, okay, bye, Anne.
They're like, I guess.
Like, I guess?
And dude, for a week?
I don't actually know that it was a week, but I think it was a very short amount of time.
It was less than a month.
Definitely less than a month. Yeah.
Right? That's wild.
It might have been less than a week. Like, I think it was like a very short amount of time. And the family was like, Anne?
Yeah, maybe don't make life decisions after 2 days. Right. 2-7 days of knowing someone.
I will say Anne did make the right call because she wasn't on the boat when everything went down.
You know what?
I take
now
it back.
Now I'm coming back around.
Jeff?
Okay.
You got room for one more?
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
Right. So from there, they sailed to the Sandblast Islands, which are just to the east of Panama, where the family welcomed a new member aboard the boat. 22-year-old Robin Williams.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Okay, so not that Robin Williams.
Okay.
But that would be an incredible twist. This Robin Williams was a Welsh graduate student in economics and statistics. So not
lame.
Quite as fun as the other Robin Williams, but Robin Williams nonetheless.
Okay, I'm like, does he star in The Birdcage? I think not.
Oh, I wish.
What about Miss Doubtfire?
Come
I don't
on.
Think so.
I mean, he's not nearly as iconic as the Robin Williams we know and love, but he is on the boat now. And so Robin was willing to help pay for the voyage, like a part of it at least, and he was looking for an adventure of his own. So the family welcomed him on board, considering they now had an open bunk. And the plan at this point was to sail to New Zealand via the Panama Canal and the Galapagos Islands. So they were going to sail like through that and then all the way across to New Zealand.
A burrow.
They were sailing around the world.
That stretch of ocean is massive.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. It's so big.
You could not pay me to be on that boat.
Okay. To recap, they're going to sail from the Bahamas through the Panama Canal.
Correct.
Which is, for those of you bad at geography like me, around Cuba.
Correct.
And then Galapagos Islands. And then they're going to essentially sail the entire Pacific Ocean to New Zealand, which is like
massive.
What looks like two Atlantic Oceans put together.
Yep.
And they've just picked up
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, the stranger. People are so, like, the people who are the most adventurous make no sense to me. You know, you picked up this random stranger and you're just going to spend every day of the next 3 months with them.
Yeah.
I have no idea who they are.
In the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Nowhere to go. What if he sucks? What if Robin Williams sucks?
What if he stinks?
What if he stinks? You'd go nose blind. You'd have to.
Yeah. For your own sanity.
Okay. I do have some numbers for you. So they were headed for the Pacific Ocean, some 64 million square miles in area, and 35,000 feet deep, with over 30,000 islands spread over almost a third of the entire Earth's surface.
That was hot. I like numbers. What can I say? I like the numbers. Thank you.
You're welcome. So the next leg of their trip had officially started, and they had a very rough departure from the Galapagos because the wind was very strong and the waves were huge. And to make matters worse, they were in an uninterrupted stretch of sea. So the boat was rocking. And on June 15th, they were about 200 miles west of the Galapagos Islands, and it was around 10:15 a.m. As Dougal was trying to figure out their position, he started making a pot of coffee on the stove. Little did he know that he would never drink that coffee. The events of the next few seconds were going to change their lives forever. Douglas was in the cockpit with his brother Sandy, who was at the wheel. Robin had gone to bed since he had done the night watch, and suddenly they heard an ear-splintering crash, and the boat jolted three times. There were three distinct crashes, all very loud.
It's a whale.
You're right.
Am I right?
The boat then jolted heavily and lifted out of the water before settling back down into the water. It felt like they had hit the ground at a high speed, but they were in the middle of the ocean. Douglas poked his head around from the hatch to ask his dad what just happened. What was that? When he looked down, the first thing he noticed was that his dad was already up to his ankles in water. And he asked his dad what he was doing, thinking to himself, didn't his father know how dangerous it was to have water on the deck like that? He thought his dad had opened a valve or a seacock, which is what that's called, and let water in. I know.
I mean, it makes sense because it had to have been named by dudes.
Yeah, a moment right? for the seacock. Okay, so he asked Douglas where the water was coming from. And before Douglas even had a second to think about what his father had just asked him, Douglas heard another big noise coming from behind him on the left-hand side. He turned and saw that three killer whales were following them. There were two big ones and one small one in between. The biggest whale had his head split open and blood was pouring out into the sea.
Wait, what? They're like wedged into the boat?
No, I think they tried to attack the boat and then he got his head split open.
Jesus Christ.
So about 2 months before that, they had been sailing through the doldrums, which is a calm part of the ocean near the equator. And there they had a big baleen whale try to mate with the boat. So it had rubbed itself up alongside the yacht, and so they thought that if that whale could mistake them for another whale, then it was possible that the killer whales had attacked them because they thought the boat was another whale. So when Douglas turned his head back around to the hatch to look at his father, he saw that Dougal was now up to his waist in water. That's how fast the boat was sinking. Douglas still wasn't understanding what was going on, so he thought to himself, if his father didn't shut this valve, they were going to sink. Because he's just not piecing it together fast enough. He's like right. not processing what's going on. But that's when his father screamed, abandon ship. And Douglas, who was still kind of a smart-ass 18-year-old, screamed back, abandon ship to where? Like, they're literally in the middle of the ocean. They weren't in a Miami marina anymore, is what he screamed to his dad. His father then said, over there, pointing to the lifeboat. Which was when Douglas finally started to understand that things had gone horribly wrong. Douglas started to take the sails down and Dougal snapped at him and asked him what he was doing. He should be getting the life raft over the side. Douglas couldn't believe this was really happening, but he did as he was told. He got the dinghy over the side, he tied it to the rail and put the oars in the dinghy and then got the life raft over the side as well. There was a huge bang as the life raft started to inflate, and that was a huge relief that something was going right. At least they had this life raft to get into. But then Douglas was washed off the deck, meaning he was now in the water. He had managed to keep swimming, but he was terrified that the whales were still around and were going to come back to get him. So as he swam around to the raft, he kept feeling down for his legs to make sure he still had them because he was terrified the whales were going to eat them.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even put myself in that headspace, but no. The sheer terror must have been overwhelming.
Unreal.
Yeah.
But soon enough, he did manage to swim around to the raft and he climbed inside and reunited with his whole family who were already inside. And getting in, he noticed that everyone looked yellow because of the canopy that hung over the raft. They were also all in shock at what had just happened. The family had thought that Douglas had been lost when he was washed off the deck, so seeing him climbing into the raft was a huge relief. They helped pull him on board, and then they had to try to take stock of what had just happened because it had all happened so fast. It had only taken minutes to sink the Lucette. The twins were crying, and Lynn told them not to be frightened. But the twins said they weren't crying because they were scared, they were crying because they lost Lucette. Lucette had been their home for the past 2 years at that point, and the source of many adventures, and now she was gone. And honestly, the twins saying they weren't crying because they were scared is a flex, because I would be terrified. But maybe they were just too young to understand the gravity of the situation.
Or they're just straight metal.
Or they're just metal, and that's also an option.
It sounds like it might run in the family.
Yeah. But either way, they were in a very uncertain and terrifying predicament. They knew they hadn't gotten an SOS out, so nobody knew that they were missing, and they knew they were 200 miles west of the Galapagos, and as far as Douglas knew, they had no food or water, and they didn't know what would happen next. So Lynn suggested they say the Lord's Prayer, and Dougal said, well, I don't believe in God, so I'm not going to say the Lord's Prayer. And Douglas said to his dad, well, can't you just say the Lord's Prayer anyway, because we might need God very soon. And Dougal said, well, if there is a God, don't you think he'd know that already? But after a few comments back and forth, they did shoot one prayer up just in case.
I could totally relate, because as soon as your life is in danger, I flip on a dime.
Oh my God, immediately. Immediately. All beliefs go out the window, and I say, God, you better help me out.
Hey, if you're up there, get me out of this one. No, literally. I swear I will be the best boy.
I will not lie anymore. I will do all my chores. I swear to God.
I'll start volunteering when I get back.
But anyway, yeah, I just thought that was really funny exchange, because he's like, I don't believe in God, so I'm not going to say the prayer. It's like, just say the prayer.
Hey, we're not in a Miami marina anymore, buddy.
Right. So the raft was very quickly blown clear of the wreck, and then they were on their own, out in the middle of the ocean. There were 6 people on this raft, and it was a 10-man raft, but it was big enough for 10 sitting people, meaning it wasn't designed to be lived on. So the 6 of them filled that space. They also had the 3-man dinghy that was attached to the life raft, called the Edna-mare.
Edna-modes.
Not Edna-mode. Edna-mare. Douglas looked out over the ocean, and a frigate bird swooped down just as a flying fish jumped out of the ocean, and it caught the fish before flying away. And Douglas felt like this was the ocean mocking them. He said to his dad, they've got millions of years on us. And Dougal told his son, yes, but we've got brains, and with brains we can make tools, and with tools we can survive.
Okay, I like
huge
this.
Huge dad energy with that sentence.
Yeah. We're not lost.
Yeah, I'm not lost. I know exactly where I am. We're fine. They noticed they had a survival pack in the raft, and thankfully it had 18 tins of water, a 1/2 pound of glucose tablets, and some cookies. Lynn had also grabbed their papers, the logbook, and a bag of onions, and they had a kitchen knife, 10 oranges, 6 lemons, and some flares. Lynn had also brought her sewing basket, which turned out to be a huge help. In the basket, they had bits of copper wire, string, ribbon, cloth, a needle and thread, and they were able to use all of these things as tools. They didn't quite know how to utilize them yet, but they knew that these things would be very important. And they were.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Douglas had also managed to get a piece of a sail that had been floating by from the wreck. So all in all, they had enough water for about 10 days and emergency rations for 3 days on the raft. They knew where they were approximately, and so Dougal came up with a plan. He told Douglas he should row the dinghy to the Galapagos Islands and raise the alarm. But Douglas knew that wouldn't have been a good plan, because they were sailors by then, and they knew that the winds would have made that next to impossible. The current was 2.5 knots, going away, and the trade winds were blowing them away from the Galapagos. So he would have to row the dinghy at 4 knots just to stand still in the water, let alone make any progress toward the islands. So there was no way he could row faster than that for 24 hours a day, and God only knows how many days that would have taken. So at 18 years old, with a very strong-willed father, Douglas said to his dad, "I'm not going to do that. That's a fool's errand, and I'll die, and as a result, you'll die." And that was the first time he had ever really stood up to his dad and said something that his father actually listened to. So after a second, his father realized how stupid that plan was, and he said, "I'm sorry for asking you. I never should have asked, but it was the desperation that was making me ask."
It's about as good as that could have gone, right?
Yeah. My next note is, which I feel like is huge with a question mark. That's kind of huge for a dad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're a reasonable guy. You know.
No,
I know. You are currently lost.
Yeah. No, it's just a very desperate situation. Everyone's scared. But point being, they needed to make another plan. They knew they could survive a while without food, but they needed to get water if they wanted to survive. So they came up with a plan to sail out into the middle of the Pacific, to the doldrums, since it rains a lot there and they would be able to catch rain. So they're not going to sail necessarily right back to the land. They're like, "We're going to sail to the part that has rain."
Smart.
Yeah. And then from there, they would sail east toward the Americas. And somehow, they might get picked up along a trade route. So they made a sail and used the oars from the raft to keep the sail up. And Dougal proposed that they sail the dinghy backwards. That way, the trade winds would catch the sail and tow the raft, and that would maybe save them a couple of days to the doldrums. Also, another thing, the survival raft was in very poor condition and was leaking.
Great.
There were bellows to keep the raft inflated, but they broke. And so Dougal, Douglas, and Robin took turns to blow it up by mouth, which was exhausting, and then also have to bail out water constantly. So like at any given moment, they are blowing up the raft with their mouths and pouring water out of the raft.
Terrifying.
Yeah. And it only got worse as time went on.
Oh, yeah. And then this is how many days in?
Like one.
Your raft is already sinking.
Very slowly at this point, but as the days go on, it will get a lot worse.
Yeah.
The family was desperate. They thought they were going to die, but they might as well go out fighting. And if they did survive for long enough, they knew in the back of their minds that they could be hit by a wave or another whale at any moment, and then they would be toast. So Spirits were not the highest at this point. On the sixth day, they spotted their first ship. They fired 5 flares in total, 3 hand flares and 2 parachute flares, but the ship sailed right past them. Before the ship had entirely passed them, Douglas told his father to fire 1 more flare straight at the bridge of the ship, but Dougal told him he couldn't do that because they may have explosives on board, and that was when he told his family they couldn't rely on being rescued, they had to sail to America themselves. But they knew that that would be a 75-day trip, and they had no idea how they'd survive that long out there.
God.
75 days.
Almost 3 more months.
Mm-hmm.
On a raft that's sinking.
Correct.
If spirits weren't low enough, they're in shambles now.
At least they were experienced sailors at this point. They had sailed around the world for like 2 years, and they knew how to navigate the winds, and they knew approximately where they were, and, you know, whatever. So of the people who could get stranded out in the middle of the ocean, it was a pretty good group of people to be stranded in the middle of the ocean, but still, not their first choice of adventure.
No.
But each of them had a purpose. Dougal was the leader. Douglas was the muscle behind Dougal's bright ideas. Lynn was the caretaker. And Robin Williams didn't have any experience at sea. But he was well-educated, and so his job was to talk. He could talk.
I feel like I'm this character.
You're Robin Williams.
In this story. His job was to talk.
Yes. Robin Williams, certified yapper.
Yeah.
Your job is to yap.
Hey, make noise.
Yeah.
Make words.
Entertain me, monkey. Yeah. Dance, monkey, dance.
And I would.
Yeah.
I'd do it well.
You sure would. And so could Robin Williams. He could talk for a very long time. And Douglas said it was just good to listen to his voice. Even when Robin told them a story 5 times, Douglas would ask him to tell it again. They just wanted to hear the sound of their voices because it was the only thing they could do out there. They also spent time talking about a cafe that they would open once they got home. It gave them an excuse to talk about food, which they did a lot since they didn't really have any. They talked about all the different crazy foods they could come up with, how they would prepare them, how they'd cook them, how they would serve them. Every detail was very important. And that's how they kept their spirits up and their moods high. Dougal also kept a map of where he thought they might be, which was rough because they had no navigation equipment. But what they did know was that the sun rose in the east and set in the west, and they knew that the underlying swell of the waves was still coming from the southeast. And so they knew as long as that was true, they were still headed north. They had an idea of where they were and would tick off mileage every day. 10 miles on one day, 20 the next, chipping away at that overall distance they had to cover. So that was good for morale as well, to feel like they had been making progress. Dougal also told his family that they were going to say survival, not rescue, because they were going to survive. At one point, Douglas told his father that he had read somewhere that you can drink turtle blood, so they should catch one and drink its blood. They had no idea how they were going to get the blood out of the turtle quite yet, but it seemed like something they could work on. The next turtle Douglas saw, he hit over the head with a paddle, and he saw the turtle's eyes filled with blood before it swam off and made its escape, which pissed Douglas off because he thought to himself, it's going to die anyway, why escape? The 18-year-old brain.
Well, yeah.
But that's when they realized they had to hunt turtles and catch them rather than just like hit it and have it just accept its death.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I know it's survival, but I'm like, oh, poor turtle.
No, it's sad. Like, yeah, a bit of this is sad, and you know, it is survival, so they do have to eat turtles. But
yeah, the turtle's going down.
Yeah, if it, in a battle between me and the turtle, turtle's toast. You know.
Yeah.
So
just don't name it.
No. No. The first turtle that Douglas hauled onto the life raft made everyone very upset because turtles are very big and the raft was already like in really bad shape. And so they were like, we cannot sink this raft with a turtle. It wasn't because they didn't want to eat it, but they just were terrified of the repercussions. So right after Douglas had gotten it, it was thrown back into the water and that one made its escape as well. And so Douglas is pissed because he's like, guys, we have to eat food. And they're like, Douglas, we have to stay afloat.
So he has to kill it in the water?
No. So when the third turtle came along, Douglas wrapped it in the lifeline that they had attached to the raft. And then he and his father hauled it into the dinghy where they cut its throat.
Yeah, I was like, don't they have a knife?
They do have a knife, but they also have the dinghy. The dinghy is a 3-person dinghy. Mm. And then they have the technically 10-person life raft. So they're just towing along this dinghy. So now they're going to use it to basically harvest their turtle. So they cut this turtle's throat and they drank its blood, being very careful not to spill any in the ocean to attract sharks. Because remember, that's also a possibility. So they cut the shell open and they saw that this turtle was full of meat and eggs. So it was a female, full of eggs. And that was great news for them. So the next morning, they basically had turtle steak and eggs.
At that point, sounds lovely.
Yeah.
So they're just eating it raw, mm-hmm. right?
That of course.
Was, I mean, yeah, I was like, there's no way they cook it, right? Or no. I don't know if they lay it out in the sun, dry it out. Like
so they do that. Turtle
jerky.
Any excess food they have, they dry out. Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. So this was a food source. They just needed more turtles. They also ate flying fish that landed in the raft and the dinghy. And at some point, they managed to get Dorado, I think it's how it's pronounced.
Oh, yeah.
Which is mahi-mahi, I think.
Love it.
But the turtles became the mainstay of their diet.
You know Dorado from blackened whitefish tacos? It's probably that.
I would assume. Love. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a good fish. And one of them, I think, just like jumped into their boat. Yeah, a huge 35-pound Dorado landed in the dinghy. So they had raw fish for breakfast and plenty left to cut into strips and dry.
Wow. Could you imagine?
35-pound fish.
Yeah. Could you imagine being that fish, though?
Oh, bad. Or just like bad day to be that fish.
Trying to frolic around in the morning.
Yeah.
You land in a dinghy.
Yeah. In the middle of the ocean. In the middle of nowhere.
It's the Pacific. Are you kidding me? Like, honestly, what are the odds?
Literally 35,000 feet deep here. It's like, how did I land in a dinghy? He did.
What a way to go out.
Seriously. For the first time, they felt like maybe they stood a chance of surviving. On the 10th day, roughly, the skies changed and there was a change in the weather. And this was good news, remember, because they had sailed toward the doldrums and they were wanting rain. They had very little water left. They had one or two cans. So they needed rain and they knew that when it came, they had to be ready to catch it. They were really hoping for it, but the next day, the sun came out and there was no rain. It was a beautiful day, and they had never been more angry to have a gorgeous day on the ocean. Their water supply had gotten dangerously low, and it was 3 days that went by before it rained, but then it finally did. And when it did finally rain, that was a big turning point for the family. Suddenly, they had water, and they filled their cans and anything else they could fill. And again, they were given hope that they could survive this. So they sang, because they had managed to get water, and they also had caught a few turtles by then.
Wow, big mood.
Big mood booster.
Wait, what were they singing?
I don't know.
Okay, well, I just, you know, imagine them singing some sweet, like, UK rock, which is fun.
Maybe some Beatles?
I don't know, maybe.
That could be fun. But surviving was really hard work. They had to catch turtles, dry their food, cut it, and when they were sitting in the raft, they were sitting up to their chests in cold water because that's how bad the raft had gotten. They were sitting up to their chests.
Just soaking all day.
Yes, oh and that itself was debilitating, to be freezing nearly to death from that alone. They were so cold but terribly sunburnt. They had developed trench foot and seawater boils, which I didn't even know were a thing. And their lives at that time were very painful. Their clothes had begun disintegrating from the salt water, and Neil and Robin had terrible seasickness. And nobody could sleep, because if you did, your head would drop into the water and you would just be woken up again. There was only one dry place on the raft, and they would take turns to sleep in that spot. Every hour they would switch off. And Lynn would often give up her time to one of the kids. At the time, Douglas didn't realize how big of a sacrifice that was, but looking back on it as an older man, he was choked up thinking about how much his mother did for them. She also would make sure the twins had a little extra food every night because they were so young. On day 15, heavy rain once again allowed them to fill all the containers, but the raft was in worse and worse shape as the days went on, and that day, the dinghy broke away from the raft. Dougal had to dive into the water and swam to retrieve it, somehow finding the energy after 15 days of being stranded in the ocean. And luckily, he escaped the sharks and was utterly exhausted, because also there were a couple instances where, like, sharks had bumped their boat.
Shit my pants scared.
Mm-hmm. Since there was rainwater that had collected at the bottom of the dinghy that was dirty and undrinkable, Lynn suggested using the water in the form of enemas. It was too foul to drink it, but it would allow their bodies to absorb the water. And so everyone except Robin accepted these enemas. Douglas had crafted the makeshift enema equipment from a tube that was cut from the boarding ladder of the life raft. It's kind of huge.
They put their ass in the water?
They put like a tube in their ass and they sucked up the water from the bottom of the dinghy.
Okay, you need to speak word. Does this work?
So,
does this actually work?
I think so.
Really?
I mean, think about like butt chugging.
Bro, I need to look like, this you shit absorb up. Are you shit kidding
through
me?
You absorb things through your butt. You can.
So you could, you don't even have to drink water. You just put a tube in your ass
well,
all day?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but.
Okay.
But they didn't want to waste the water.
How did it get so dirty in the first place? Well, you're in the middle of the fucking ocean.
They were using the dinghy to clean turtles and fish and whatever, and then also sitting in it at one point, like it's dirty.
Okay,
what are you looking up?
rectalrehydration.com. Oh. Here we go.
Not rectal here rehydration. We go.
Oh, this is a UK site.
Okay.
realfirstaid.co.uk. bro, are you rectal infusion, the medical name is proctoclysis, was effectively employed as an emergency treatment during the First World War for combat casualties and routinely used for infusion in clinical settings before the development of IV techniques.
Really? Enemas are OG IVs?
I guess.
That's crazy.
And equipment rendered the technique redundant.
Sure.
I'm sure people just didn't want shit up their ass. Early studies demonstrated the colon can retain up to 500 milliliters of fluids per hour.
Wow.
They call it rectal rehydration.
Well, Lynn was a registered nurse and like whatever, so she probably knew that, you know?
That is insane.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Now, take this with a big grain of salt.
Right.
That I just Googled this shit.
Well, sure. We believe everything we read on the internet, obviously.
I don't know.
But like, it makes sense to me that it would work. It's a very good thought, if nothing else.
I never thought about it for water. That just seems so insane.
Well, because if you have any other option, why would you put water up your butt? Like, you could just drink it.
I know.
But anyway, point being, it's a good thought. They did that. Robin Williams said, no, thank you. But everyone else had rainwater enemas.
Did they share the tube?
They must have. They had to. No? They didn't have six tubes.
Could you imagine?
What are you gonna do?
An ass tube with your mother. Are well, actually, you dead?
While we're on the topic of ass, I was wondering what they did to poo.
Perp.
To perp.
You probably just go in the water and you perp.
You very well could just jump out into the water.
Drop trout in the water.
Just hang your butt over the side or something.
Yeah, just like, oh, sorry, go downstream.
It's not like they weren't eating. Like, they definitely had to let it go at some point.
That's true, but it does sound like it wasn't a high fiber environment.
No, definitely not. So I'm sure it wasn't as often as the normal person on land. But
I also thought about this, but I thought you wouldn't be into discussing it.
Well, once we got on the topic of ass, I had to ask.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, we can move on now. I knew we were going to get stuck on the enemas.
How can you not, though? No,
I agree. I was also perplexed. Anyway, on the 17th day, the raft was finally no longer usable. The floor had dropped out from it completely, and they knew they couldn't stay with this raft anymore, and they would have to all get into the dinghy, all six of them, into a three-man dinghy.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
They salvaged what they could from the raft, including flotation pieces to be secured to the bow of the Edna-Mare and the canopy to give them shelter. As they were disembarking from the raft to get into the dinghy, a turtle came along, and they caught it. But it was a very big turtle, probably 35 pounds, and they put that in the dinghy as well. And thankfully, they were still afloat. After about an hour of being in the dinghy, the family watched the remains of their life raft float away. They had made it this far. The life raft had gotten them off the Lucette, but now that it was gone, they were truly on their own, and in a boat that could sink at any moment. They had to keep it afloat, but there were 6 of them in this 3-man space, and they had at least another 700 miles to go, if they were correct, which they didn't know for sure if that was the case. But one night, on the 20th day, Douglas looked up and saw the North Star in the sky. He woke up his father and pointed it out to him because mariners know you can only see the North Star from 5 or 6 degrees north of the equator, and they had sunk at 2 degrees south of the equator. That meant they had sailed 7 degrees to the north, or 420 miles, which was proof that they were going in the right direction, and they were in the northern hemisphere and were on track. Isn't that cool?
That's so crazy. Like, all of the things that you can just figure out from seeing a single star is crazy.
I know. So once again, they had a bit of hope that they were going to survive this. But day 23 was the worst yet. They found themselves in a massive storm. There was lightning all around them, and the torrential rain required constant bailing. They were in a desperate situation and had to bail for their lives. Douglas told everyone to sing to keep warm, and surprisingly, the wind fell silent and the rain stopped. The wind changed direction, and somehow they had survived the worst night yet. On day 28, there was another rough patch, and this time there were 20-foot waves.
They're in a dinghy.
In a dinghy. Come on.
Wow.
Terrifying.
Who was seasick?
Neil and Robin.
Yeah, how are they doing now?
Not good.
Oh my God, 20 feet.
They were all in terrible shape. And the next day, Dougal caught a 5-foot mako shark.
He caught a shark?
Yeah, he hauled it on board and cut its head off, and the severed head closed its mouth on Dougal's hand and drew blood. But he kept the teeth. Isn't that crazy?
That is so metal. Can you admit you caught a shark? How did he catch the shark?
So they had a fishing line that was like just hanging, I guess, below the dinghy. And that's why there were a couple sharks around them, because they had like attracted sharks. And I guess he caught a mako shark with the fishing line.
Damn. Mm-hmm. So he just decapitated it.
But then it bit him. Post-mortem.
It fought back.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of, I mean, they're old, old things. They're just like...
They're like dinosaurs.
Moving things of cartilage.
Yeah.
They're like reptiles. So it just bit his hand, and he just kept it there.
Well, he kept the teeth. I guess he got it off his hand.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep the teeth at that point.
Of course. You caught a 5-foot mako shark in the middle of the ocean on a dinghy? Yeah, I'm keeping the teeth.
Another level of metal.
Yeah. By day 36, things were getting dire. The seas were rough, clothes were tattered and threadbare, the twins were very thin, Neil was emaciated, and Sandy had a cough, which was possibly pneumonia. And on day 37, Sandy's cough had become worse, and the prospect of rowing the estimated 350 miles to land became more pressing. By their estimation, land was about 15 days away, and there was probably enough dried meat and fish to last, which was good, but Dougal almost capsized the dinghy trying to drag a turtle on board, which was obviously terrifying, and also they were very worried about this cough that was happening. On the 38th day, they had been adrift 6.5 weeks. It had rained heavily that night, and the family had been really scared for their lives in that very small dinghy, all of them simultaneously bailing water out of the dinghy all night long to stay afloat. But despite that, on July 22, 1972, on the 38th day, the weather was pretty good, and spirits were semi-high, despite everything. The seas were calming, and they talked about how many miles they were far off from land. They talked about Dougal's kitchen, which was the cafe they had created to talk about food, and at about 4 PM, Dougal saw a ship. They had almost forgotten that ships could pick them up as well. They didn't even remember that that was a possibility. They had convinced themselves that they were on a survival mission and were going to sail to America themselves, but now suddenly they had the opportunity to be rescued once again. Dougal held up one hand flare, and they didn't see that. But the ship was getting closer and closer. They had gotten within a mile of the ship, which was very close at sea. And they had one last hand flare left, and everyone steadied the dinghy as Dougal held up the flare. A hand flare, from what I gather, is not like a gun where you shoot up the flare into the air really high. It's like, essentially looks like a stick of dynamite that you light, or you crack it, and then you hold it up, and it's just, like, burning.
Oh, but you can throw it.
Well, you could throw it up in the air, but it's not going to go nearly as high, and then if it goes in the water, it's out.
Yeah. Is it day or night?
It was day. It was about 4 PM.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of tough to see if it's bright out.
Yeah. There wasn't any wind, and so as the flare burned, it fell down and burned Dougal's hand, but still, he held it up. He did not care. And then he threw it away, and they held their breath. But then they saw that the fishing boat had altered course, meaning they most likely had been seen. But even as they watched this boat alter course, they didn't let themselves believe it was for them until there was no mistaking it. Their clothes had been long washed away, and Lynn had saved them all some tattered rags, that way they could put that on to be rescued, which was funny, but... kind of cute. She was like, you have to cover up for being rescued.
Oh, wait,
like,
they're all naked?
Yeah, their clothes had been washed away.
Okay, that is an extra detail I didn't know.
Yeah, that was another thing that I was like, oh yeah, their clothes are all disintegrated.
So he's naked and catching a shark.
Yep.
That's insane.
Yep. So she covered up her kids with these tattered rags as the Tokamaru, which was the boat that found them, approached them. She was about 100 feet away, and they threw a rope at the family. Douglas said it was a dirty, smelly, oily rope. But as Douglas grabbed it and held it in his hand, he realized that this dirty, stinky rope was his lifeline to what they had left behind, which felt so long ago at that point. Douglas was so in shock that he wouldn't let go of the rope because he became scared that if he did, they would just leave without them. But as they got closer, things felt less terrifying. And once they touched the deck, it felt like a dream. Douglas asked the Japanese fishermen on board if they could save the dinghy, because he was also having a hard time believing that their survival was over. They didn't necessarily want the dinghy, they just wanted the food that was in it, because they had saved that food and water and it was very valuable to them. And the captain told them they had food and water on board, but still, Dougal didn't want to hear it, so they saved the dinghy.
Wow, I mean, I get it, but that's a testament to how deep into that mindset he was.
Yeah, that was their lifeline, so they wanted to keep it. And Douglas said he will never resent his family, and he thanks his father every day for what he did. He took them on an amazing adventure. It didn't turn out right, but that wasn't Dougal's fault. Although he and his siblings never felt it was anyone's fault, his parents never forgave themselves. Douglas had wrote a poem while on the raft, and his mom finished the very last line of it while they were on the ship on the way home. And as she did that, she burst into tears and said they never should have done this. But Douglas said, "Mom, nobody died. We're all going home. They had all survived, and that was a great feat they had achieved. They had survived in the middle of the ocean on a dinghy for 6.5 weeks.
Almost 2 months. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
For six people.
On a 3-man dinghy. I mean, not the entire time, but yeah.
And honestly, they could have kept going.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, who knows how long they could have, but yes, they did go for a very long time, and they probably could have gone for longer, but...
You said they had food to reach land.
They did.
So...
But they were terrified that, like, another 20-foot wave would, like, hit them just wrong enough, and they would all flip and...
Yeah, sure, but...
Yeah.
It's not like they would have... 100% died if they weren't found.
That's true. No, they were doing a very good job of surviving. Douglas said, "Life is never so joyous as when you're alive and you know you can lose it at any moment. Just living can be very joyous when you know that you might not be alive on the next wave. And we'd lost that. Now we were going to face a new life without the Lucette and without anything, actually. They weren't insured, and they had lost everything when the Lucette went down, but they were 25 miles out in latitude and 100 miles out in longitude with no navigational instruments whatsoever, which means they had traveled over 750 miles by raft and dinghy and had about 290 miles left until they would have reached land." So they were essentially right on track. Like, they knew exactly where they were and exactly how long it would have taken them, and they were right.
That's so crazy. So it's insane how accurate you can be if you just know the right things.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, the sun, we got east and west, we got north and south.
The waves are going this way, therefore I'm going north. Yeah.
Great. You're like, okay,
wow. There's the North Star. That means I'm in the northern hemisphere? Like, what?
Yeah, and wow, I've traveled 400 miles.
Yeah, crazy.
At least.
When they arrived in Panama on July 28th, 1972, the world press was there to greet them. And Robin flew back to England, and the Robertson family came back by ship, and their daughter Anne was waiting back in England, and the family was soon all together again.
Okay. What happened with Jeff?
Well, I don't have that information, but Anne came back to England, so I don't know if she brought Jeff or if Jeff is toast, if we don't care about Jeff anymore.
Okay.
It didn't seem like pertinent information. I'm really sorry.
Yeah. It had to be a fling, right?
Who knows? Maybe they were deeply in love.
I don't know.
Who cares anyway? She didn't have to live through 6.5 weeks on a dinghy. If she had, like, well, I guess they wouldn't have picked up Robin Williams if she had still been there. Because
who would have talked?
Who would have talked? Could Anne yap for 6.5 weeks straight?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Anyway.
No, but I'm thinking about the completely different experience that she had,
mm-hmm.
where she was probably living the dream.
Yeah, she was just like in the Bahamas with like her new man, living it up.
Yeah.
And they were like, the boat's going down. Also, can we just acknowledge killer whales sunk their boat?
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Just out of nowhere.
They just said, "I don't like this," and they just sunk it.
So much so that one of them split their head open.
That's how angry they were.
They could see the whale bleeding, right?
Yes. Douglas, like, said he saw that the whale's head split open because it just, like, attacked the boat with its head, question mark? I don't know. But three of them. Killer whales are terrifying. Anyway, if you're wondering what happened to the dinghy, the Edna Mare, was named after Lynn's sisters, Edna and Mary. So it's Edna Mare.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, Edna had given the family money to buy the dinghy in the first place. So thank you, Edna. You quite literally saved their lives.
Yeah, every last one of them.
Yeah. For many years after the rescue, the Edna Mare had been in the care of Edna, but later was brought to Falmouth, where she had begun her voyage and was donated to the National Maritime Museum in Cornwall. Other artifacts on display include a pressure cooker weight from Lynn's sewing box that was used as a fishing weight, some of the teeth from the 5-foot Mako shark that were kept as a trophy, turtle oil, which was an extremely valued resource made by melting turtle fat in the sun. The oil was used to rub onto saltwater boils. It was drank as a warming tonic, mixed with fish and turtle meat to make a stew, and helped with the enemas. I guess they used it as like a bit of lubrication for the enemas.
Damn.
Yeah. So on November 26, 2008, Douglas Robertson gave a lecture entitled The Last Voyage of the Lucette, which was held at the museum, and they also wrote books. Dougal wrote Survive the Savage of the Sea, and Douglas wrote The Last Voyage of the Lucette. So if you're interested in hearing more about the story, you can definitely find more information in either of those books. And this ordeal, of course, changed their lives forever. And even now, over 50 years later, the memories stick with Douglas. Although they did amazing work out there, they were also extremely lucky, is what he said.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta be, but also give yourself some fucking credit.
Yeah, I mean, no, they deserve all the credit. They really did that.
Yeah, I mean, how experienced they seemed to be and how much knowledge they had definitely was a big part.
Absolutely.
Of why they survived.
Yeah, which I guess is his whole point. It's like, yes, there was a lot of information that we knew and like helped us along the way, but also a lot of luck was involved.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the Robertson story. I think we've yapped enough about them.
Yeah, well, that is what we do best. If we put us on the raft, I'll never shut up.
And I know that's right.
And you believe that to be true.
I know it to be true, in fact.
But we're not making it.
No.
We're not making it.
No.
But thank God we don't have to.
Yep. Well, anyway, let's have a bit of a palate cleanser. And you can tell me your good thing. What's your good thing?
We just had our friends over for the first complete housewarming.
That's true. Yeah, we never really had a housewarming.
Domicile.
Right. Right.
However many months after we bought it too.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was nice.
It was very good.
Little board games.
Yeah, a little pizza. My friend made ribs. They were unreal.
They were unreal.
Yep.
But it was very homeowner, adult, little party on a Wednesday night.
It was very good. I agree.
So
my,
it was fun.
My good thing...
Wait. Let me ask.
Okay.
I don't ask. I sound like an asshole.
Okay.
What's your good thing?
Thank you for asking. My good thing goes hand in hand with your good thing. I had a vision of putting up a neon LED rope light. It's basically an LED squiggle on the wall. And it's taken us like however long we've been in this place, 2 months,
yeah,
to actually get it up. And it's now finally up. There's a squiggle on the wall. And it makes my day every day. I can change the color of it whenever I want to. And it's just a nice, happy squiggle on the wall. And like, what more can you really ask?
Yeah, I mean, this thing was such a pain in the ass.
Oh, it was so annoying.
The first one broke.
Immediately.
Within 24 hours of us owning it.
Yeah, we got it on the wall. And like, I turned it on and it was working. And then like 15 minutes after getting it on the wall, it was like, actually, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
So then we had to get a new one.
Yeah.
And then we put it up with masking tape for like weeks.
That stayed up for so long. And then
so
we
long.
Finally hung it with the like proper clips. But it's been
honestly,
a journey.
Probably a month.
At least.
And then if you didn't come to me and say,
We're hanging it today. Yeah.
I would have not done it until you did that.
I know.
Because I was so daunted because you wanted it in this really specific shape.
Yeah.
It had to stay the same throughout the hanging process. And I was a little scared.
I'm very particular about my squiggle, all right?
That we would unsquiggle the squiggle.
No, it's okay. We didn't unsquiggle the squiggle, and now it's on the wall.
Here we
are. We're very happy about it, and now it's my good thing. But anyway, Thank you so much for listening. A bonus episode came out recently on Patreon, and that is about Mary Louise Day, who mysteriously disappeared from her home in Seaside, California, and then was found alive 22 years later when she was disappeared for almost all of her life. So that is over on Patreon. If you're interested in that, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on the podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Cafe quality brews without a barista? That's the Ninja Lux Cafe. Yep, no skills needed. Rich espresso, balanced drip coffee, rapid cold brew, all made by you because Barista Assist technology handles the details. Grinding, weighing, brewing, so you don't have to. Finish with silky microfoam made with dairy or plant-based milk, hot or cold, hands-free. Still no skills needed. From first-timer to full-blown coffee fan, you can brew it all with the Ninja Lux Cafe. Shop now.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.